Welcome to Torah Smash, the podcast for nerdy Jews, where our lives of Jewish learning collide with our love of nerd culture. I am RDY, and joining me today are
Barack Malkin,
Ethan Lane Miller.
In each episode, we discuss what we lovingly call a Torah Smash, which we have defined as a beautiful collision of one thing from the world of Judaism with another from nerd culture. Today, we are going to be talking Dungeons and Dragons. And this is especially cool for a couple of reasons. Number one, if you look on the Torah Smash website, which is torahsmash.com, my tagline, the descriptor that makes me nerdy, is that I run a D&D campaign for other rabbis. So this is something that I love to do. It's something that really involves my creativity and gets my creative juices flowing. And it's a love that I've had since about 1984, and great way to spend some nerdy quality time with friends. And I sent each of you an article. I hope you read it. This is an article from a website called Hey Alma, and I'm not going to say the author's name. Normally, it is, considered...
Just to clarify, listeners, he did not send all of you articles. he just sent it to me and Ethan. So I don't want you to freak out. Well, it went to my spam. It did not. But if you'd like to become part of our mailing list, go to Torah Smash. Go to torahsmash.com to join our mailing list.
Normally, it is considered good form to cite your source and give credit to the author when someone writes something that you're going to be talking about. It's called B'Shem Omro, in the name of the one who spoke it. And in this case, I'm not going to do it because I have some things to say about the article that may be construed as insulting to the person who wrote it. And I don't want to talk bad about a person. I want to talk about the things that
content.
Were
content. Yeah.
So content. This article was called Dungeons and Dragons Has an Anti-Semitism Problem. Now, I also think normally what we do is you have to figure out what the smash is, but I think the title is the smash.
Oh,
but
that
there's
title.
A twist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I guess what it is?
The sure. Twist?
No, I want to guess what the title is.
Oh, he just said the title of the article.
Well, I know. That's why I was gonna get it right this time.
Oh. Go ahead. Guess. Go ahead.
Is it Dungeons and Dragons has an anti-Semitism problem?
Wow, that is so close. You are like one word away. Because I believe Dungeons and Dragons, yeah, I believe Dungeons and Dragons does not have an anti-Semitism problem. But I believe Jews have a problem. Hmm. And look, nobody's perfect, and I like Jews, but I think we have a big problem. And so this is what I would ask you to guess. What is our problem as Jews?
Ooh, is the problem D&D related? Like Jews don't have
not
enough
quite that
Jews don't have enough class.
Oh, that's funny.
That's a good one.
That's funny.
Yeah. Thank you.
No,
I'll be here this entire episode.
I'm glad you didn't make a race joke, but that would be something to hit that I would give you points for. Do you want to keep going with D&D puns?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to get, is the twist D&D related or is it just anti-Semitism related?
I would say anti-Semitism related.
That the D&D is going to guide this anti-Semitism discussion, but there's another twist to Jews having an anti-Semitism problem.
Yes.
Is it like the self-hating Jew situation?
No, that's a good guess. That's not it.
Is it that we're, I don't even know if I believe it, but is it that we're too sensitive to certain things or that we're looking for anti-Semitism where it doesn't exist?
Yeah, that's it. It's a Cassandra problem.
Hey, you got it right.
Oh, you really got it right.
Ethan!
Yes. Wait, did you call it a Cassandra problem?
Ethan. Yes.
Like, can you clarify? I don't want to say the wrong
Cassandra
type of
Cassandra is a character in Greek myth.
Oh, okay, good. I'm glad I didn't say anything.
Cassandra is a character from Greek myth who is, she's an oracle, but she only ever sees problems.
Oh, like Bruno.
Like Bruno. We don't talk about Bruno.
We don't talk about Cassandra.
No. So let me go through the points that the article makes quickly because our dear listeners don't know the article we're talking about except for the title. So the article is called Dungeons and Dragons Has an Anti-Semitism Problem. And the suggestion is that because Dungeons and Dragons is based heavily on J.R.R. Tolkien's creators and creations from his world of Lord of the Rings, which we talked about a few episodes ago with our wonderful co-host, Miriam Ansvin.
Episode 10, go back and listen.
Please do. The suggestion is that dwarves were based on Jewish stereotypes. Stout, jewel-obsessed, relegated to a secondary status, calculating, tricksters, that kind of thing. And because Gary Gygax, who created Dungeons & Dragons in the late 60s, was probably influenced heavily by J.R.R. Tolkien's world, the author suggests that Dungeons & Dragons is problematically anti-Semitic because Tolkien was anti-Semitic. I consider that a flawed in logic. There's probably a name for that logical fallacy where, like, because A and B likes A, therefore B is like A. I don't think at the time Gygax created Dungeons & Dragons, we were generally, we meaning the world, were generally aware of Tolkien's anti-Semitic tendencies. And I also don't think that Tolkien's anti-Semitism was so egregious that he should be canceled or anything like that. But it is important to say, at the time period, there were people who were ignorant of Jews, and they believed what anyone told them about Jews. And anti-Semitism is a problem. And as of this recording, we are about 4 days after a big CNN special on anti-Semitism in America, which was an interesting and very, very good news report. Much better if you watched the whole thing than if you only caught the first 20 minutes, because the first 20 minutes is a lot of this Cassandra stuff. And then they got into a little more of the history and reality that we're facing as Jews in America today. So I think there's a problem with that premise. Then he talks about the phylacteries that a lich uses. So a lich is an undead creature created when a very powerful wizard returns from the dead, which in D&D parlance is undead. And the lich is tied to this world through something called a phylactery. And the author only knows one other thing that's called phylactery, and that's tefillin. And for our non-Jewish listeners, tefillin are the boxes that we wear on our head and arm if we choose to do so for a prayer service, because of the Torah verse that says you shall bind them as a sign upon your hand and keep them as symbols before your eyes. So this author doesn't know any other use of the word phylactery. So he assumes that they're using this word in a blasé way when it should be a sacred word. Finally, he takes issue with the golem. The golem is a character from Jewish lore originating in Poland that was a creature made out of clay that a rabbi would write the word emet, which is the Hebrew word for truth, aleph mem tav, on the creature's forehead, and it would come to life and save the Jews. It was, you know, one of the original superheroes.
It feels to me like a little, do you know Rick and Morty? Feels like now with that description, feels like a Meeseek.
I don't know Rick and Morty.
Oh, that's okay. Ethan appreciated it.
Yeah. Okay, good. And hopefully our listeners.
Did. All right, go ahead.
So the golem, creature made out of clay that comes to life, and D&D took this creature and said, this is a great idea. Let's make a golem in our monster manual. And let's not just make it made out of clay. Let's offer different kinds of golems. There's a stone golem now, a flesh golem, you know, whatever material you can have in D&D 5e, the fifth edition, which is the current one people are playing. Just about any material in the world, you can have a golem made from it. So my argument...
I'm trying to think, what is the worst material golem you think there? Like a feather golem?
Styrofoam, because they totally... Styrofoam golem. Poop totally cannot hide.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
bubble wrap golem.
So this author is saying that using the golem in such a blasé way is also problematic as far as
like appropriation,
as far as Judaism. Yeah, appropriation. But you know, all the best stories are appropriated. There are only six plots, after all. So what I think is that Dungeons and Dragons is actually a very, very good tool for Judaism and for teaching Judaism and for teaching creativity. There's actually something called homebrewing in Dungeons and Dragons, which is where you take the general rules of the game, but you don't follow the adventures published by Wizards of the Coast. you use the adventures that you create at home. And homebrewing is just like Midrash. You use the same creatures and characters, but put them in new stories of your own inventions.
You know, I don't think I ever realized that there was like put out stories. I always thought that the Dungeon Masters created their own, like maybe there was guides on what you could do, but every iteration, right? I'm pretty like, even like Stranger Things, right? Most recent, I'm pretty like those guys create their own tours and do them, right? I don't think I've seen iterations where they're like reading from a book, right? Maybe I like Pixar's Onward, maybe their version of D&D. I think they had like they were following a story piece when they explained it, but
I don't remember either specific scene from either movie. I've seen both shows, I don't remember the specifics, but I will say, like, you know, the Demigorgon is a monster from D&D, and
I think all of the Stranger Things monsters are monsters from D&D. They pull them into the lore.
Absolutely. And the BBEG, as we call it in D&D parlance, the big bad evil guy in the most recent season, he was a lich.
That's fun.
Powerful magic user.
Yeah.
Returns from the dead.
Yeah. That's cool. I was excited for this episode because I never had the chance. I've not played Dungeons and Dragons. I've been a big fan. I've always wanted to. I know. I think it was, you know, when I was growing up, I don't think we had enough money to play Dungeons and Dragons. So I only got to play Dungeons or Dragons.
I love that.
But I do want to play one. I've never played a campaign. I've always wanted to.
I've played a little bit. Most of it was homebrewed. It's all, other than like the little tutorial, it's all been something that our dungeon master has prepared themselves.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's my offer to you.
Yes.
And listeners, if you would like to be a part of this, send us an email. I think the three of us should play what's called a one shot of D&D with Miriam Anzavin, because she has played at least once and
but she hates,
expressed interest.
Well, yes, but she said she doesn't like the math of it.
Right. I think I can help her with that.
We can cover that.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
You for sure can help her with that.
Yeah.
I have computer programs to help me. You actually know the math. And I would love to
get Isaac back.
What a one shot. That would be great. Maybe we get as many of our guests who play Dungeons and Dragons as we possibly can.
Yeah, let's try to aim for like a 1 year anniversary. We'll do like a special one shot for like our 1 year episodes.
Here's the rub. Sometimes playing Dungeons and Dragons does not take 45 minutes.
All right, so listeners, get ready for our very long Monopoly length episode. I think that's the basic gravy. People it's understand awesome. That Monopoly takes long. Yeah, that sounds fun.
Double the size, same price.
I think we got a little off track. Bring us back, RDY. What's our discussion question?
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
The discussion is, in Dungeons and Dragons and in life, do we try too hard to find anti-Semitism?
Oh, wow.
Well, I read the article and I will say I was pretty convinced, but I think what you were saying for when the creator of Dungeons and Dragons took those characters, he just took them as face value, as characters, and that nothing more. I don't think that he knew about it at that period in time. I don't know. I think in today's world, we're very cautious and we have our eyes open in front and behind. And we are looking out for things to make sure that everybody has a space where they can belong. And so I don't know, in the histories, you know, in things that have been created in the past, I think there's plenty of examples where it's tied in because of the time period and things were brought in. And I think people are just recognizing it more, right? I don't remember when that article was from, but it was recent. It wasn't from when Lord of the Rings was written, or when Dungeons and Dragons was written or created.
The article was from January 28th, 2021.
Yeah, so super recent, right? So, and, you know, even I'm going to bring it back to Stranger Things, where in the most recent season, so slight spoiler alert, not really, it was like in the first episode, there's this big discussion about how Dungeons and I think this was a real thing, how Dungeons and Dragons was taking over the minds of the youth. It was a cult. There was about death and violence and these other pieces. And that's what they ran with at the time when it was very popular. But it wasn't really that. So I think that
it was a part of a different movement. There was a movement in the 80s called Satanic Panic. it wasn't, sorry, the movement was referred to as Satanic Panic, where anything, you know, heavy metal, Dungeons and Dragons, video games, you name it, was all related to Satan worshipers.
Yeah.
And 99 times out of 100, they were totally wrong.
Right. And well, I think people try to find meaning in things in their own way, right? We're doing this with the podcast, essentially, of finding meaning and purpose in things that don't apparently have them. And whatever your focus is, you're going to look for those things all over. Like, if you are obsessed with those pieces, everywhere you look, you'll see it. So
that's a really good point.
Yeah.
So my question is there a difference between looking for connections between our nerd culture and Judaism and trying to find why everybody else hates you?
So something interesting that once you told me what your angle was that I thought of is there was a opinion piece in the Forward, the title of which is, I'm begging you all to please shut up about the Harry Potter Jew goblins.
Ooh.
Yes. And
it's like the same topic.
It is. And so the author takes your point of view, RDY, and writes, and I have it pulled up over here. The goblin characters in the Harry Potter series, known mostly for their role in running the Wizarding Bank Gringotts, are anti-Semitic because they look like Jewish caricatures and perpetuate anti-Semitic stereotypes. So the author goes on to write, I disagree. The Potter goblins are diminutive, hook-nosed Saurian creatures with creepy long fingers and crafty natures. They have exceptional financial skills and stop at nothing to acquire or protect money and precious objects. It is anti-Semitic that anyone would encounter such a character and think, aha, a Jew.
Now I'm curious, okay, if we were to go backwards in time, like, and I don't know if J.R.R. Tolkien had created the trolls after Jews, right? If we went far back enough to any of these creations when people made goblins, trolls, whatever other creatures people believe are connected to something, are they actually connected to that? Or are we just looking back and making this connection, J.R.R. Tolkien was anti-Semitic? Was he anti-Semitic?
He was very Christian, I believe. But I think sometimes he expressed it as a polemic, which started sounding anti-Semitic.
Right.
This is an area I'm not an expert on.
Right. So I don't know. I don't know if we are now creating these backward reflections in that, or if J.R.R. Tolkien was just creative and thinking of different a tiny creature that lives under a bridge, a troll. Like he didn't invent the troll. Trolls came from older. So I'm assuming the D&D guy had the same thought of like, well, trolls have existed for a while in different iterations, but I don't know if we are overthinking or spot on thinking in these cases. But it feels like I don't know how far back we have to go to say like he didn't create the troll. So to say that D&D then is anti-Semitic because of the troll character, I don't know if we're finding the wrong connection.
Right.
There. Yeah.
And I think the point about the Just Kidding Rowling characters and about the trolls in D&D and the golems in D&D, but there are also, you know, sprites and fairies in D&D and devils and demons in D&D and angels and, you know, all kinds of creatures that come from all kinds of different mythologies. And that's the beauty of the game, is that Dungeons and Dragons can be smashed to any culture and you can find something that is a part of your culture. But one of the things that I love about Dungeons and Dragons is how accepting it is of all people. That, you know, you want to choose a race in the game, you can be elf, dwarf, gnome, half elf. They did have to call one of their characters halflings because Tolkien wouldn't give them the right to call it a hobbit.
Interesting.
Yeah, but they're still like pulling from other things. And then today you can have half dragon characters and half orc characters and all kinds of different races that have been created throughout the years that have been incorporated into D&D. You know, whether you're a kind of a rabbit or a kind of a bird or a kind of a hippopotamus or, you know, something like that. It's almost a world of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but incorporated with Dungeons and Dragons rules. And again, like one of the reasons it's so great is because, oh, you're this race and I'm this race. Okay. Next, let's go adventure.
Something I'm curious to explore is essentially what you're asking is like, what's real and what's not? What's in our heads and what is actually there? And it makes me think of, so, and I don't play Magic the Gathering, so I'm only observing this discourse from the outside. But I remember, like, in the last couple of years, I've noticed, and I've witnessed this on like some different nerd websites, like discourse about Magic the Gathering tropes or certain Magic the Gathering cards that are being retired due to racist stereotypes. So they're stereotypes of the cards or stereotypes of the characters and the roles that they play. And so,
right,
you know, I think what makes this challenging is we can point to places in nerd culture where there have been stereotypes. They've been very unfortunate. And there's, you know, unfortunate, I imagine there are elements of truth hidden there. But your question is, in this case, are we being overly sensitive or not?
Sure. And I think the difference between Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons, I played Magic the Gathering from 92 to 01. And the difference is that Magic the Gathering, each card has an illustration. And so sometimes that was a part of what was problematic. Especially a lot of the good characters had lighter skin, a lot of the bad characters had darker skin. And so it made for problems. That's stretching what I'm aware of. But I did hear that there were cards retired due to tropes. But I think that's also a beautiful thing, because what Magic the Gathering is demonstrating is teshuva, which is an incredibly important aspect of being Jewish, that there is an acknowledgement that no one is perfect. And the ability that we have to do teshuva, which means repentance, sorry to not translate that right away, to be able to do repentance and come back to a better version of yourself, that is more Jewish than being punished and canceled. Because God doesn't want us to be perfect. God wants us to work on ourselves and to put that effort in so that we can continuously be better. And if we're perfect, we can't get better.
I know that part of the teshuva process is not just undoing what you did, but finding a way to correct it, right? Or to make amends. And so do you know if I know that you said you stopped in 01, I'm assuming because of the great Magic the Gathering debacle of 01. I don't know why you stopped, but
I stopped because I sold every card I had to live in Israel for a year for my first year of rabbinical school.
Oh, very fun. All right. So do you know if they ended up putting out those cards again with different images? If they not just pulled them, if they corrected it also.
I'm sorry.
So they might still be in the teshuva process.
Maybe. But the fact that, but pulling the cards is teshuva as well.
Yeah.
That to say like, okay, let's not use these cards
That's
anymore.
True. Yeah.
We have lots of other cards that are wonderful.
Okay. I want to get to the second part of your question. I don't think we've dove on it. Can you repeat the anti-Semitism part of the question?
I hope I'm phrasing it the same way.
Yeah.
Or at least close enough. Do we try too hard to find anti-Semitism where it's not?
Just in the world. You're like in our everyday actions and things that are happening today.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, my first reaction is no, because unfortunately we don't have to try too hard to find anti-Semitism in the world. But I wonder if we have been conditioned to be very sensitive.
That's a great question. I still struggle with this next piece regarding comics, right? Comedians and what they can or can't say, right? Part of me is they're a comedian. If you're paying to listen to them, then you have to just listen to whatever they talk about. And the other side of me is, you know, there are plenty of topics that I don't think should be joked about, but that's my opinion. And there's plenty of things that I think are okay that other people will think not. So I like struggle with that. It's like, I think comedians should be able to talk about whatever they want to talk about. And you just have to understand that that's their opinion. They have the right to do those things. But then I struggle when there are, you know, heavily anti-Semitic jokes, right? There's very few Holocaust jokes that I'm okay with, because I think that's right. Like, and so when that happens, I go, well, that seems like too far. But for me to say that's too far and the other things are not too far feels hypocritical. And so that's where I always struggle internally with it, is I think they should be able to talk about it. And then the other side of me is struggles of like, it's there. I'm not struggling to find it, but it's there. Now people are going to repeat those jokes and share those jokes.
Comedy is a tricky art because there are things to joke about that are universal. And I think that some comedians are very good at that. And to, I mean, to put it at its simplest level, like blue humor, when, you know, there are comedians who don't swear. Right. And
is that called blue humor? I've never heard that.
Blue humor is when you swear. And the reason they call it blue humor is because in the clubs, if you were too dirty, too raunchy, they would hand you a blue envelope with you know, that would have a note in it that said, please tone it down. Here's the joke we have a problem with. So they called it, they started calling that blue humor. The comics who don't do what's called going blue will say it can be harder. It can be harder to do it this way. But one of the funniest bits that I've ever heard is by John Mulaney, who does a bit about the greatest lunch he's ever had in the Salt and Pepper Diner with his best friend, whose name is also John. And they play What's New Pussycat.
Oh my God, this is a great
bit. 21 times.
I love it.
It's hysterical. The first time I heard it, I had tears in my eyes.
Yeah, same.
And there is not one swear word. There's nothing that is perfectly appropriate to share this with my 5-year-old kid. Right. So you can be very, very funny without being dirty. Andrew Dice Clay, not so much. But people who listen to Andrew Dice Clay want to hear that raunchy, dirty humor. And people who listen to John Mulaney want a little, dare I say, more intelligent humor.
In terms of finding anti-Semitism in today's world, I think I struggle with the, you know, a couple of years ago, there was a very, I think there's always maybe little spurts of anti-Semitism, but a number of years ago, there was seemingly a big rise. And we actually, it was when we were getting ready to have our first kid. And
is there something that happened a couple of years ago that might have led to this rise of anti-Semitism, Barack?
I'm unsure. people can speculate in the history books. And
all signs point to yes. Watch the CNN special. They almost flat out say it.
Oh. And so we, like, I almost took our mezuzah off of our door frame, our front door. I stopped wearing my Jewish star necklace out. And then we were deciding on names for our first kid. And I was, for a little, very little while, hesitant to give him a Jewish sounding name. And then part of me said, well, I shouldn't hide. There was another part of me that said, like, yes, there's a rise in anti-Semitism. I can't be the person that cowers back because of it. And so we did not remove our mezuzot. I did not stop wearing my necklace at the time. And we did give our kids Jewish sounding names. And so I think it's there. I think the anti-Semitism is in the world. And I think that the people that use it, I don't think would proactively always state that they're anti-Semitic. And so if we're finding it in those pieces or not, yeah, I do think that it's out there. Whether we're overly finding it, I think that depends on your perspective, right? There's ADL. If you go to their website, there's anti-Semitic acts every day, very, very frequently. I would say, I don't think we're being too sensitive. I think that it's there and we have to acknowledge it in order to be able to make action and move forward. But
I want to build off of that a little bit. And I think that it might be useful to, instead of treating it as a yes, no binary, to think of it as a continuum. You know, as a Jew living in Texas, it's been a hard year for us here. There have been several high profile instances of anti-Semitism, attacks that were made that were clearly anti-Semitic. But I think when we talk about teshuvah and repentance, you know, I think intent has something to do with it too. And I think that it is both possible for someone to flat out be motivated to do something anti-Semitic based on their belief about Jews, and both someone to have a character who's a caricature of Jews. They can both be anti-Semitic, but, you know, I think someone's motivation casts some nuance to it. You know, someone who's like, I hate the Jews, they control the world, is not someone who you can probably be reasonable with or negotiate with, but someone who accidentally creates this stereotype and caricature, that's someone you can have a dialogue with, that's someone you can talk to. It still might be anti-Semitic, but I think the intent matters. One can be used as an educational experience. The other, there's not much education, I think.
I totally agree with both of you. And I think that because there's anti-Semitism in the world, and because we can point it out, means we don't have to look for it when it's not there. And that can be, that's where we start crossing the line and getting dangerous, because, you know, the ADL website has some incredibly valuable resources for things that we wouldn't necessarily know are anti-Semitic that are. Like if you see the number 1488, for example, 1488 refers to the 14 words of the white supremacist like motto or whatever. And then 88H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. So 88 means HH, so Heil Hitler. So when you see something like that, seeing a number on someone's tattooed on someone's arm might just be like, oh, that's weird. That must be their birthday or whatever. But it's deeper than that. And so there
could be. What if you were born January 4th of 1988? That would be unfortunate.
Let's hope people would stop you from tattooing it on your arm if that's the case.
That's true.
And there are symbols that, you know, like the Iron Cross and the swastika we're very familiar with, but there are some symbols that we're not as familiar with that still are white supremacist symbols that we need to be careful of. But Dungeons and Dragons is not one of them. And that's my problem with the article, is that it takes a beloved, amazing game and casts dispersions on it when there's no need. And if that person had done a little more research, like looking up other definitions of phylacteries, then maybe the article would have come out different.
It sounds very similar. I'm going to go to the D&D side of this for a second. We're talking about anti-Semitism and finding this in there. We discussed how Stranger Things has that link to when they were at the satanic panic of the 80s. But, you know, even growing up, right, video games were always like, if you play video games, you're gonna become violent. Or I was a big fan of on MTV Celebrity Deathmatch when I was in middle school, maybe. I don't know if you've seen it. It was a claymation wrestling show.
Like, yeah.
And I thought it was so funny. And my mom was really worried that I would become aggressive, violent, whatever. But instead of saying that's inappropriate, that is good, you're going to become violent if you watch that, you're going to end up hurting people if you watch that, she sat down with me and said, you know, do you understand? I just want to make sure you understand this is not real, and you understand that these are not things we do to people, and like, and you can watch it, but I'd like to be there with you in case you have any questions, sort of thing. So then she ended up watching Celebrity Deathmatch with me whenever, and she hated it. She did not find it funny. She didn't hate it. She just was not as amused and laughed as hard as I did when things happened. But I think that's a missing piece of this conversation, is that if the person who wrote that article is somehow a listener of Torah Smash, I would love to have you on to have this conversation of let's talk That'd about the concerns you have and why we enjoy it, and that we understand that even if there's these perceived notions of anti-Semitism and hatred and bigotry, we understand that when we go into the world, we are not anti-Semitic and bigoted and fill our hearts with hatred. That is not what we get from playing D&D and video games and other RPGs, is that we are looking for a creative...
That stands for role-playing game.
For Susan, role-playing game is RPG. Is that when you can have these instead of just shutting something down, I much prefer the conversation piece. And I think I got that from my mom. And I think that's something, if you listeners out there, if your friend, spouse, children, whoever, community members are doing something that you have a perceived notion against in some way, I just implore you to have a conversation with them and talk to them about it. And if you have concerns, say, listen, I feel like it's that. I just want to make sure you're not going to do X, Y, and Z, because I think that would be harmful to others or yourself. I just want to make sure you're not going to harm yourself or others by doing this other activity.
I'd also like to jump off of that and say a thank you, because I have made this mistake in the past. And as a storyteller, I had stories that I loved to tell. And you mentioned tragedy in Texas. One of the rabbis involved in one of the incidents in Texas was Rabbi Charlie Citron Walker, who told me that one of my stories was problematic. And he told me how it was problematic. And he came up to me in a very loving way. And he said, I don't like this story. And let me tell you why. And he did. And I thanked him. And I was at first upset because that's how a human might react when someone tells them that their favorite thing is wrong. And then I thought about it and I have not told that story since. And that's thanks to him being caring enough to say to me, what you're doing is insulting to certain people and here's how.
Yeah.
And that's how we make tshuva. That's how we do repentance.
Yeah. And it might be hard, right? I was not so connected to Celebrity Deathmatch when my mom said, like, and she sat down with me about it. But if you're passionate about it, like if somebody, right, if somebody told me that Zelda meant that, you know, I was going to do something horrible, I don't know what I would do, but I'd probably have a little more intense reaction. I think as long as we can have these conversations and understand that the perceived notion you have, I don't have that perceived notion. That's not when we understand and look at D&D, I'm not looking at them and saying, oh, there's a Jewish caricature. I'm seeing this fantastical creature that is in stories from many different iterations of fables and fairy tales and fictional writings. So yeah,
it's funny that you bring up Zelda in particular because it's a Yiddish word.
Zelda is?
Zelda is the feminized version of the name Zelig, which means blessed.
Very fun. Oh, that's great. Yeah. I hope to do a Zelda episode in the future. So I have not even explored the depths of that. The creators are not Jewish. I didn't know
it
that.
It could just be a happy accident.
I would assume it's one of those happy accidents. But hey, if you know, let us know in the comments.
And speaking of in the comments, I have a feeling that me saying all the things that I said about Jews being oversensitive is going to spark some of that sensitivity. And I hope that if you think I'm wrong, which I'm used to being told I'm wrong, I'm married, and and I would be happy to engage with you in a peaceful way and hear what y'all have to say, because I think it's important that we express our opinions, and even if they're different from one another.
Yeah. And I hope that if you've made it to this length of the podcast, that you understand that we do not believe Dungeons and Dragons to be anti-Semitic or
correct
most of your beloved pieces that we might have talked about, that these are just perceived things. And we're happy to talk about what we hope you do and don't do as a result of those things.
Amen, Selah.
What is that?
Amen, Selah. Selah is just a fancy amen.
Cool. This was great. I was excited. Yeah. I was worried I wasn't going to have enough Dungeons and Dragons knowledge for this conversation.
I thought I'd have to make an intelligence check.
A lot less about Dungeons and Dragons. Yes! Yes! Oh, Ethan, the one who says he doesn't play that much. Wow.
I knew enough.
I love it. I love it.
That's great.
Your humor check rolled a 20.
Yeah.
Great. I would also like...
Yeah, go ahead.
I would also like to say, if you want to hear more about Satanic Panic, there is a fabulous podcast called Stuff You Should Know, and they did a brilliant episode on Satanic Panic. Listen to that episode and all of their like 1,000 episodes or however many they have. They're great. You listen to Troll Smash.
So I haven't played D&D. Ethan and RDY, I'm curious, have you had like a really memorable campaign that you've played?
So
do we have time to hear a quick piece of it?
Yeah, I'll go fast. So we did kind of a homebrew thing called Starfinder, which is D&D but set to space and with like a space theme to it. I mean, shocking that that's what Ethan did,
right?
we call that Spelljammer in the world of D&D.
Nice. Yeah, it was, yeah, the elements and all of that. And so one of my friends organized and DM'd a campaign, and because I hadn't done very much, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, I didn't even know what type of player I was. I discovered I was the type of player who really forced the dungeon master to think on his feet. He'd be like, all right, our story starts. We're sitting in the space cantina. He'd be like, oh, what's on TV? He'd be like, oh, well, you know, it's sort of like, oh, which sport is it? And so because I kept asking these questions, we invented a sport called Bitkern. I was like, oh, what's the score? And he goes, it's 3-2. And I said, oh my God, how is it so high scoring? What time period is it? It was great, just delightful. He ended up having to called it
an entire sport. That's hysterical.
Just through questions, he called it. He had to like Ethan proof some of his like campaign things, where he'd be like, Ethan's gonna ask me something stupid about this, so I'm gonna have something written out in advance.
That's very funny.
I remembered that a lot. It was a lot of fun.
That's fun. And you, RDY?
you know, again, since I've been playing D&D for almost 40 years, I will say that I'll take from my most recent one where I was DMing a homebrewed campaign that I had based on a novel I read. And this was all for beginners. So this is the current Rabbi campaign. And this campaign developed from some rabbis saying, can someone teach me? And so I made something that I figured would be quick. We go into a world, into another dimension, and you have to find your way out, and then we'll get out, and then we'll talk about if we want to keep playing D&D. So that was all I had created, was the way in and the way out. And for flavor, and because I had based it on this novel, I made the main commerce in the world human trafficking, because that was the book. So these rabbis who all hear that there are slaves in this world, instead of wanting to find their way out, they decide they want to stop slavery.
That's very funny. Ethan's so, in music. This yeah, is
that's
like a
that's
directive.
A very different campaign than what you yeah. had planned.
Oh my God. Yeah. Cut to RDY making furious rewrites during in between first and second session.
Wow. That's very cool.
It was great. And it actually ended up being a wonderful campaign because they did try and they were semi-successful in freeing a lot of slaves. They got to a point where they couldn't get any further. They found the way out of the world and now they're doing other things. But the campaign has been going for about a year and a half now and it's been wonderful. And I hope we keep going for a long time to come.
Have they revisited the slave labor universe?
Not yet, but I do hope they will someday.
Mm. That's very fun.
I have a feeling they all listen to this podcast. So
I wonder if they're like Narnia stumble into it by accident. They get like it's something they came out of and they don't know where it is, and they'll accidentally stumble onto it again through a different entrance or something.
I will neither confirm nor deny that I am plotting as we go.
Great.
Love that.
Cool. Did you have anything else you wanted to say to wrap up?
That you should play D&D. It is not just you, Barack, and you, Ethan.
I want
but
to.
Y'all, listeners, and if you're interested in trying to get a game together, there are so many resources and sites and ways to play online. It's really becoming easier and easier to play with technology. So send us an email. We can help you out. I cannot promise to start any campaigns with our listeners because I'm a rabbi and I have a lot of other things to do. But one campaign is about all I can handle. But I can connect you with friends who play, and I still do want to do a one shot with the two of you and some others. But
yeah,
other than that, yeah.
Awesome. Great. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Torah Smash. Our fiscal sponsor is Jewish Creativity International. Our theme music was created by Sean Fogel. You can check out Sean's bands and studio work at www.thesleepywest.com. This episode is supported in part by Magnetic Shul. Magnetic Shul is a tech-free, self-contained toy perfect for prepared parents, Jewish educators, and youth professionals. The colorful sets invite children to play and create their own stories. Each comes with a synagogue background and over 50 magnets of the people and props we encounter while at shul. Through Magnetic Shul, children are encouraged to play, developing familiarity with the sacred space. Ultimately, Magnetic Shul is where kids play to pray. To learn more about Magnetic Shul, visit www.magneticshul.com or contact its creator directly at justin@magneticshul.com. We want to hear from you and continue today's nerdy discussion. Go to torahsmash.com to find where to connect with us online, email us directly, support us with a donation, find previous episodes, and more. And what do you call a rabbi who always seizes the opportunity to run a Dungeons & Dragons campaign?
RDY?
A carpe diem. What was that?
Oh, I'm just snorting because I laugh like a nerd.